Our topic for today's show is the immigration reform bill. By a vote of 68-32, the Democratic-controlled U.S. Senate approved a bipartisan bill that includes a path to citizenship for an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants. Among the highlights of the 1,200-page Senate bill, a path to citizenship for immigrants who arrived illegally before December 31, 2011, spending of $330 billion border security, including 20,000 new border patrol agents, 700 miles of fencing, unmanned drones, and electronic surveillance. The number of the U.S. Border Patrol agents would rise from 21,000 today to about 40,000. Requirement that border security and fencing goals be met before undocumented immigrants can become permanent residents. A startup visa for foreign entrepreneurs, new visa programs for low-skilled workers, and the agricultural sector. And all employers must use E-Verify, a program to verify electronically each employee's legal status within 4 years.
President Obama praised the Senate for approving the immigration bill and is urging the U.S. House to do the same. The president has made immigration a top priority for a second term, asking Congress to deliver a bill to him to sign by autumn. Of all the 100 senators, all 52 Democrats, 2 independents, and 14 Republicans voted yes for this bill. The immigration reform bill now heads to the Republican-controlled U.S. House, where it is already facing vocal opposition. House Speaker John Boehner says the House will craft its own immigration bill, and he will not bring any immigration bill up for a vote that does not have the support of the majority of the House Republicans. So what is actually in the Senate immigration bill? And if the Senate bill actually becomes law, what will it mean for the entire nation? This is what we're discussing today on the Tone and Tenor Show.
Our guests for today's show are Amanda Bergson-Shilcock with the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians, Ms. Maria Sotomayor with the Pennsylvania Immigration and Citizenship Coalition, and on the phone with us is Mr. Bruce Thatcher, who has written a book about immigration. Welcome to the Tone and Tenor Show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you.
And I'll just add to some background. Actually, Maria, since we're kind of started, I want you to kind of give some background on yourself and your organization.
Oh, of course. Well, my name is Maria Sotomayor. I work for the Pennsylvania Immigration and Citizenship Coalition as a Defer Action coordinator there. We, after Defer Action was announced last year, we started a coalition of nonprofit community organizations and legal service providers to give legal services, education, and outreach to those who are able to apply for Defer Action. So since then, we have been providing our free legal services to them and helping them file for their applications for Defer Action. I'm also an immigrant from Ecuador, and my family have been living here for almost 18 years. Mm-hmm. Well, my sister and I have been here for 12, which is just turned 12 this month, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long time since I've been to Ecuador, but it's also been a time for me to figure out who I am and also to live this new life that my parents brought me here for. And I have been able to meet so many wonderful people and had so many important people in my life throughout this whole time that I have met, which I'm very thankful for. And because of the Defer Action, I was able to get a work permit, and that's how I'm working now at the Pennsylvania Immigration Citizenship Coalition. Mm-hmm. And I have been doing advocacy on immigration rights since I was a sophomore in college. Right. So that's where I am now.
Okay.
Thank
awesome.
You.
So just a little more context. Some of the viewers and listeners, rather, may be familiar with the Deferred Action Program. Others may not be. In the U.S. today, there's about 40 million immigrants. About 45%, just under half, have become American citizens. And the remainder are in a host of different immigration categories. Some of them have their green cards, which is permanent residence. Some of them might be here on a student visa. Some of them might be here without papers. And the program that Maria referenced was specifically for young immigrants who were brought here by their parents when they were children and who do not have immigration status. And so the program gives them a temporary legal status. But the president and the executive branch can't give them permanent status. Only Congress can do that. And so the immigration bill that passed the Senate yesterday and is in the House now would change a huge range of things about our immigration system. But one of the things it would change is give young people like Maria the right to apply to permanent status.
You just listened to Ms. Amanda Berkson-Shilcock, Director of Outreach and Program Evaluation for the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians. The Welcoming Center is a centralized employment and referral center for the Philadelphia area's growing immigrant community by promoting immigrant participation in the area's political, social, and economic life. Since opening in 2003, the Welcoming Center has assisted more than 8,000 people from over 140 countries. And on our phone is from New Brunsfels, Texas, is Arthur Bruce Thatcher. He wrote a book entitled Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. He is also the founder of History Speaks Today. Mr. Thatcher was against passage of the Senate immigration bill. The town Mr. Thatcher is calling us from today is about 30 miles away from the San Antonio and about 190 miles away from the U.S.-Mexico border. Thank you again to everyone for joining us. Mr. Thatcher, I'm going to ask that you give us a little more detail about yourself and your book.
Sure, I'd be pleased to do that. I have actually moved down with my family or with my wife to New Braunfels about 6 years ago after retiring from a 40-year business career, most of that time spent in Kansas City area. During that time, I became increasingly concerned and distressed that in a variety of areas, we don't seem to learn from history. History has lots of lessons for us, but we don't tend to pay much attention to them very often in either private or public life. So I thought I'd try to establish and see if I could create a method of articulating history lessons the way lessons in business are articulated, for instance, as practical lessons for today. And that project is History Speaks Today, which is at historyspeakstoday.com for anybody who wants to look at it a little bit more. The first book that I put together on that was something called Adam and Aggressors that had to do with aggressors in the world, how to identify them and deal with them. And I was fairly pleased with the ability to draw from history and create lessons. In researching that book, I found a number of cases where immigration played an important part on the world stage for some countries, and I set about to write a book on immigration, how to avoid its perils and make it work, and see if I could identify and articulate lessons from history on what makes immigration work or immigration policies work and what makes them fail. And so I've looked at the immigration policies of seven countries, 11 different policies, including the three that we've had in America, and identified, shown the ones that have been successful, those that have failed, and have articulated three guidelines for what makes a successful immigration policy. And that's kind of where I come on, where I come from in looking at the current bill. I'm not opposed to S-744 so much of because what it does, illegal immigration is certainly a problem, and under any manner we've got to address it. But rather I'm concerned with what that bill doesn't do. It doesn't really do much of all, having to do with the majority of the elements of our current immigration policy. And there are some really big problems with the current policy that need to be changed, and this bill doesn't do it.
Could you elaborate what your opinion is that the bill doesn't do, what those big problems are?
And Bruce, when you elaborate, can you kind of reference the 1986 immigration trial?
Well, I'll reference 1986. I'd be pleased to do that. Also reference 1965, the Hart-Celler Act, which is the one that established the current so-called preference system in American immigration policy.
Right.
What that bill set out to do, that plus a couple of later bills that added to it, set out to eliminate all manner of discrimination in our immigration policy. We had had a quota system based on national origins up to that point. So it replaced that quota system with a system called a preference system, whereby instead of saying we will take only so many people from each country based on that country's quotas, instead we'll take only so many people based upon what kind of people they are. And specifically the bill, and let me reference the actual immigration under the existing immigration policy over the last 10 years from Department of Homeland Security statistics. About 10.5 million total legal immigrants have come to this country or achieved legal permanent residence status in the United mm-hmm. States during that period of time. Of those, 64.4%, over 6.7 million of those were what the bill calls family of existing legal permanent residents. These are broken down into a number of preference tracks depending on what sort of family you are, and there are ceiling numbers established on most of these tracks. They don't call them quotas anymore because, after all, the act was to get rid of quotas, but they are limitations, except for one huge category in the law, which is called unlimited immigration. Immigrants not subject to limitation. The biggest group of immigrants in that category are immediate relatives of United States citizens. When the bill was passed in 1965, mm-hmm. testimony before Congress said that this would never become a particularly important factor. And in the few years following its passage, only about 30,000 immigrants per year came here under that unlimited immigration provision. In the last 10 years, over half of all immigrants have come under that provision. What used to be 30,000 a year has now grown to over 500,000 a year, 480,000 a year of those family, because of its provision of being unlimited for immediate family members. So 65% of our current immigrants come in on a family basis. 15% have come in under preference plans for, and there's three or four different ones, for employment-based immigrants, immigrants who have skills, talents, training, and so forth. 9% have come in under as refugees, 4.5% under so-called diversity program, 4.5% also as asylees or under pardons to allow them to come in, and then a few other miscellaneous kinds. So that's the structure of our mm-hmm. current immigration system, and within that structure, the biggest uncontrollable part of it, and the biggest flaw in the system, in my opinion, is that approximately half of our immigration policy now, growing every year through chain migration, is this unlimited immigration category. And the current bill, S-744, did not even address that issue except to expand it by increasing the definition of immediate relatives to include not only immediate relatives of citizens, but also of legal permanent residents who are not citizens, immigrants, before they become citizens.
Yeah, Bruce,
That's one example.
I did notice that. I do want to have Amanda comment on that.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Thatcher, for the historical perspective. I think one thing that your analysis puts in clear light is the United States is trying to meet several different goals with its immigration system. We want to provide the land of opportunity for people who are ambitious and bright and come here and want to advance their lives. We want to be a place of humanitarian refuge for people who are fleeing persecution. We want to benefit our own country from the people who are arriving. And perhaps we want to benefit from their inventing skills as innovators. Perhaps we want to benefit from their scientific talents. But I think it's important to recognize that, as you noted with the 1965 bill, it's really hard to predict what's going to happen when you pass an enormous piece of legislation that changes many aspects of a system all at the same time. And the two things that I think are most important for the listeners to have in their minds as they think about this is some of the best benefits that the United States has realized have come about through unpredictable means. We have Google today because we allowed in a young Eastern European refugee and his family. Mm-hmm. That's not something you could have predicted when a six-year-old was arriving here in the United States and the Internet wasn't even on the horizon. So it's really difficult to predict what the implications of immigration changes are going to be. The other thing to keep in mind is that one of the other goals the U.S. is trying to reach is to not be Italy or Japan, both of which are struggling with an aging population that doesn't have enough workers to support the retirees. So an increased flow of immigrants is important in making sure that the baby boomer generation, which is starting to retire now, is able to do so comfortably and to be supported by a younger group of workers coming into the labor market.
Amanda, I think those are excellent points. And it's unquestionable that our immigration has brought enormous benefits to this country in all of those areas. I want to speak to two things that you said. One is the many different goals that immigration has attempted to serve over the years. And one of the things I show in my book is that you cannot successfully serve too many goals, because they begin to conflict with one another, and you end up having inconsistent policy and inconsistent understanding of what that policy is. And in none of this am I pushing for one goal or another, but let me take as an example the aging population.
Those are good points, Bruce, and we're going to come back to those points when we have to go to break now. Let's continue with our guest, Amanda Shocock with the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians, Maria Sotomayor with the Pennsylvania Immigration and Citizen Coalition, and on the line, Bruce Thatcher, author and founder of History Speaks Today. Maria, why don't you share us the story that you shared with me recently about your parents coming to the country and kind of where you are today?
All right, thank you. Well, my parents came to this country about 18 years ago. They left my sister and I behind in Ecuador in care of my grandmother, and I didn't see them until I was about 9 years old. Later on when we came to the U.S. Since then, when we came, my sister and I were denied the right to go to a public school in one of the districts because of our status. The person there told my mother that if she came back and like made a big deal about it, that she will make sure to give the paperwork to somebody who will do something about it. So since then, I realized that being here undocumented was a struggle and it was hard. But my parents did everything they could to make sure we got a good education. Mm-hmm. They have worked really hard their whole lives. They have been living in this country, paying taxes. All of us contribute a lot to our community. My sister's currently in college. I just graduated a couple of weeks ago, actually. And everything that I have here is because of my parents, because of the sacrifices that they had to make to bring us here. But if you ask, like, why are we not documented yet? I mean, we have been living here for so many years, and we still don't have a green card or a residency or anything like that. Well, when my parents tried many years ago, they went to a lawyer who was a fake lawyer, a scam artist, like you would call them, and pretty much took all their money. And they came back one day to find out how the application was going, and they walked into an empty office, pretty much.
Mm. Wow.
And the lawyer had taken their money, never done anything. So that's where they just struggle with trusting
I see.
The legal system. Yes.
What does, with the passage of this bill, how do you feel that's going to affect you? And what would you say to the House representatives to about the bill and how you would get to where you need to be?
Right. Well, the way this bill will affect me as a dreamer, like mm-hmm. under the dreamer section, I will be able to receive my citizenship within 5 years, right. which is... Mm-hmm. It's not that much time compared to how long it will take for my parents, which will be about 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, my parents have been here almost for 2 decades. I have been living here for a decade already. And for it to take 13 more years for them to even become
U.S.
citizens, it's going to be forever. But at the same time, having this bill pass will be life-changing because, I mean, we are already doing what an American person is doing, you know, taking care of everybody, contributing to the economy, everything else, without having a legal status yet. But I know having that status, it will open so many other doors mm-hmm. to us that we can, I can start my own business someday. I want to be here.
When I would tell them those barriers that you that you're facing right,
right.
now.
Right. Even like when I went to apply for college, I had absolutely no choices. I didn't know where to go. I couldn't apply for any financial aid. I couldn't apply for anything. I was lucky enough to find a school that wanted me for who I was, not because I had a social security number at the time or because I was a citizen. So... there's a lot of things that are very hard that people don't know. They just always say, oh, well, why don't you just get a green card? Why don't you just go right. become a resident?
Or they say you're taking our jobs. You're,
right.
You're taking an ed spot in the education system, which is failing us right here in our own country.
Right.
But in reality, you're not. You're working harder than most to get just a little bit ahead in what is considered the land of opportunity.
Right. Yeah, that's why my parents brought us here, because... when we were younger, they looked at my sister and I, and they looked at themselves, how they had to struggle, they had to work really hard. My dad had to drop out of school because he had to take care of his parents' business. So he didn't want the same thing to happen to my sister and I, to grow up in this beautiful country and then have nothing else. So they wanted to be able to afford a good education for us so we can become professionals, so we can one day have our own business, who... we can pretty much break the cycle that immigrant families have to go through, which is leave their families behind so they can send money so they can have a better life.
So most of the time when you leave your families behind, I know that a lot of undocuments that are here in this country, whether you're African, Ecuadorian, Chinese, Asian, what have you,
anywhere.
They work hard so they can send money back home. Having been to other countries, you know what the struggle is over there.
Right.
So, I mean, with Ellis Island, with the Statue of Liberty here in this country, and majority of our elected officials, whether they're local, state, or federal, there is some type of somebody in their family migrated to this land of opportunity. And for them to close the doors on others, I think it's appalling. That's just my opinion.
No.
I don't think there's a problem with people not wanting people to come, and I'm sure there is, but I think the economics of assimilation has to be addressed, and that's what a lot of people are discussing now with the details of this bill. Amanda and Bruce, Amanda first, why don't you comment on that?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is it's tempting to think that there's just one line that all immigrants wait in. But in reality, our immigration system is an enormously complicated machine.
Absolutely.
And it has lots of different lines. And for some people, there's no line at all that they're eligible to wait in. And so when people like Maria tell their story, it's really common for people to say, well, gosh, you know, how come you guys didn't get in line? And the short answer to that is, if there isn't a line available, it doesn't matter. You can knock on lots of doors and there won't be an opening. So we were talking before the break about the fact that the U.S. is trying to meet several different goals with its immigration system. So the wonderful side of this country is that we've been a place of opportunity for several hundred years for people from around the world. the difficult side of this country is that we have struggled to allow full access to those opportunities to everyone who's here. And we stand today on the shoulders of the people who in the civil rights movement and who following the Civil War worked to establish full access to society for everyone who lives here. And so I think one of the things that's important about the immigration bill is it says we want to make sure that there's a clear, transparent, understandable process in place so we don't have this haphazard series of, you know, accidental laws or things Congress came up with as a temporary fix for something that turned into a 20-year, Band-Aid. But this is a more systematic and more thorough review of what we want our system to accomplish and how we think we're going to get there. It's still not perfect, and we have our author, Mr. Thatcher, on the line, and I'm sure he'll give some historic perspective as to how he thinks it could be improved. But I think the most important thing to recognize is that we've said very clearly as a country that we want there to be equal protection of the laws for the people who live here and equal opportunity for people who are born here, as well as the opportunity to naturalize and to become an American. Not all countries have an easy pathway to actually becoming a citizen of that country. You want to become a citizen of Japan, it's extraordinarily difficult. And one of the great beauties and strengths of the United States is that we do offer that opportunity, and I think that's a really important thing to recognize.
Bruce, there's amnesty and there's border security. Can you comment on both and how they work hand in hand?
Well, amnesty, some of the other terms used for that are regularization of status. The amnesty is a very charged term, and a lot of people think this bill is amnesty because of its concentration mm-hmm. on the illegal immigrant situation in this country. I'm not going to comment whether I think it's amnesty or not, because that situation has to be addressed. There's no question about it. But border security is, in my opinion, probably not going to be the way that the problem is solved. We have a huge land border where we seem to think we only have a border on the south, but we have a border on the north also. But we're talking about somehow or other putting a fence or closing. Security seems to, in so many people's mind, be let's close that border down so nobody can get across it unless we know. Well, first, that's never going to happen. It will partially happen to some extent. And second, it won't solve the problem. Because people, more than 50% of people who are undocumented in this country entered the country legally across the border or through ports of entry, and they simply overstayed their visas.
Right, right.
And so far in our history, we haven't done anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
We passed a law in 1996 that ordered the Immigration Department, now the Department of Homeland Security, to create an electronic entry-exit system such as exists in countries like Australia so that we could know very efficiently whether people were here or not. That law was never implemented. It was reauthorized and redirected five or six times after that, including in 1986. A similar provision was made for E-Verify, but that law has never been implemented. And I guess my bottom line on control of the border says that if we don't implement the laws, then pass all the laws you want. We're not going to get so-called security or reliability out of our border.
And Bruce, Amanda wants to comment on that.
Yeah, I just want to jump in briefly because I want to push back against the idea that we've never attempted to deal with people who overstay their visas. Actually, the U.S. has done a number of things. We could argue about how well those things have worked. But, for example, one of the ways in which the U.S. has really changed its process in the last decade is around the consular interviews before you come to the United States. Mm-hmm. So this just happened with a young woman that I'm familiar with. She grew up in rural Kenya. She had exposure to a computer programming class, and she wanted to come here to the U.S. To study computer programming in a three-month summer program. But when she went to the embassy to apply for a visa to come here, they did not grant her one. And the reason for that was that the U.S. State Department decided she didn't own enough property or have enough ties in Kenya such that they could be sure that she would indeed go home again at the end of her 3 months. So the U.S. has taken a number of steps, both to deal with people who are already here who may have overstayed, but as well also to sort of cut off the future flow of people who may overstay. Obviously, there's a huge challenge here, and you correctly pointed out that there's 11 million undocumented people, and about 40% of them originally came on visas and overstayed. So I don't think any one solution is going to fix it, but I think it's important to acknowledge we are already doing things.
We are, certainly we are already doing some of it, but we're not doing, we are not enforcing uniformly the laws, and the laws I'm talking about are the ones that say, that have said for almost two decades that we're supposed to have an entry-exit visa system, a tracking system that lets us know when somebody overstays a visa. We haven't done that yet. And what makes us think that just because we put in the bill again that they have to do it, that we're going to do it now?
Well, wouldn't that be a form of accountability that somebody would have to step up to the plate?
Well, I agree, but the administrations of four different administrations have had that responsibility, and they haven't stepped up to the plate. So the bill S-744 tries to build in things that says we'll do it now. I'm saying that people who think that's who look askance at those provisions in the bill certainly have a lot of historical experience to cause them to look askance at it. I don't think border fences are the way to do it. If you look at the history of nations that have had successful, that have been successful in their approach to unauthorized entry and unauthorized immigrants, what you find is that over the years, what is consistent is that they have consistently enforced very clear and unambiguous laws.
Right.
I'm not arguing whether you agree with them or not, but they've enforced them. Nobody is in a quandary about whether they ought to try to sneak into Japan. Australia has very clear laws. If they're successful, right. If you have clear laws, you enforce them, and people know you enforce them, then you don't have so much trouble with people trying to come across the border unlawfully. Along with that, and Maria, you've got to absolutely clear up this incredible, disgraceful mishmash of procedures that surround our immigration policy. I know people, friends of mine and relatives, who have had to go through that process, and it is disgraceful.
Well, one thing that stood out for me when I looked at the bill, it did appear to have a lot of loopholes and ambiguity in it. Amanda, do you think they should have did a piece by piece or piecemeal legislation versus this gargantuan legislation?
Well, I'm not a political scholar, so I'm going to leave the question to how to approach major changes to people who do know that kind of thing. I will say two things. First of all, the bill lays out a pretty aggressive time frame for some of the security mechanisms that they want to implement, whether it's border security or otherwise. What's different to my mind about this bill based on past bills, is this time there is a built-in pressure group of 11 million people who will want the U.S. government to achieve those milestones, because those 11 million people are going to be waiting in what's now called a registered provisional immigrant status, basically a limbo status. And they won't be allowed to apply for permanent green cards until those triggers, those milestones have been passed. So that's creating a sense of pressure and urgency that we haven't seen in previous versions of immigration bills. And frankly, I think there's going to be employer urgency as well.
Well, you know, what I find interesting is that we're debating a border of always on Mexico, but we never talk about the Canadian border. We never talk about coming in through Florida on the boats.
Right.
But we want to always talk about. So my question maybe, is there a big business that's getting ready to put up that fence that has some governmental ties or earmarked? Does anybody have an idea or think a thought about that?
Well, you know there's going to be lobbying for that if this were to go through. But we're going to go to break now. In studio, we have Amanda Berkson-Shokok with the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians, Maria Sotomayor with the Pennsylvania Immigration and Citizen Coalition, and Bruce Thatcher, an author and founder of History Speaks Today. Amanda, why don't you tell us about some things I've been hearing about. I know a lot of this bill, it's a lot in this bill that I could personally talk about and go into detail with, but one of the things I'm hearing about now is how with the influx of new legalized immigrants, how it's going to crowd the numbers for unemployment, particularly in other minority communities. Can you address that and refute that?
Sure. Well, there's three points that are important to be conscious of. The first is when you have additional workers in the labor market who have legalized status, that actually raises the floor on wages for all workers because it means that you don't have that downward pressure on wages that you see when undocumented workers may be being able to be exploited by employers who are not so scrupulous. So that's one thing that happens. Another thing that happens that's important to keep in mind is immigrants are not only working in the labor market, but they're employers. They are creating businesses. And when immigrants have legal status, it frees them up. Maria talked about the process of applying to college and how frustrating that was for her when she didn't have an immigration status that easily allowed her to do that. If I'm a small business owner, and right now I'm running a small business and I want to get a loan to expand my business and hire more people, I can't do that until I have immigration status really that will allow me to do that. So we see all the time that immigrant workers are creating businesses and often hiring American workers. The last thing to remember is that immigrants are also creating international trade ties. So U.S. businesses benefit when they can export to other countries. I'll give you a quick example. There's a gentleman by the name of Mike Pearson. He runs a business called Union Packaging. It's in Delaware County. He has a very diverse workforce. It includes immigrants. It includes American-born ex-offenders. It includes a wide range. And he is African-American. It's a minority business certified, minority certified business. He has built his business. He designs packaging for restaurants like Wendy's or McDonald's, that kind of a thing. He now has overseas sales in Latin America. When his company does better with overseas sales, that helps the American workers who work in Delaware County in his business to do better. So absolutely, it's important to keep a careful eye on bills like this because they're going to change the flow of the labor market. But I think there's more positives than negatives overall.
We're going to take our first caller, Victoria from Bucks County. Victoria, thank you for your call.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello there. I'm Victoria.
Yes.
As you said, I'm calling from Bucks County. I just wanted to quickly address the whole line for the green card. One person, I'm sorry, I don't remember who that person was pointing out the difficulty of receiving a green card. And how some have shorter lines, how it's very complex, and how others don't have a line at all. I am currently a green card holder. I have been a green card holder for 3 years, and I hope one day to naturalize. And my father is a skilled worker, which is how I was able to come to the United States. And I have found that there are multiple benefits to being a green card holder. But my opinion, though, is even though I am here because of skilled workers, I'm here through family, I feel that others should be able to, we consider America to be the land of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that opportunity is being shut off if we only keep it to the people who we consider to have value. And I understand that in the immigration system that it is very important for America's economics to consider the people who are skilled workers. But just going down to fairness even, I feel that the immigration system is very important that this reform, I do feel that there should be a major milestone instead of small break, small little legislation. And yeah, that's basically what I have to say.
That's a great perspective from your personal experience. And I'm going to have Maria comment on that.
Oh, thank you, Victoria, for calling. Yeah, it's true. For a lot of undocumented immigrants, it's very hard, and you're lucky that you're able to have a green card. And I hope the best for you, and hopefully you'll be able to become a resident soon and then a citizen. And it's not being able to have an opportunity like the one that you had. It's very hard, especially for many. I work with a lot of undocumented high school students who are telling me that they're ready to drop out of high school because there's no point of going through high school. When once you're done, what are you going to do? Either go work, cleaning houses, or washing dishes, or I can't apply to school because of my situation. I can't get any financial aid or anything else. So those are the big obstacles that a lot of people have. A lot of kids want to go to school, want to continue their education, but they can't simply because of that.
Thank you. We have Andres on the line from Radnor. Thank you for calling, Andres.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Andres Vivanco, and I'm basically on the same boat as Maria. I applied for deferred action, and basically we're just, you know, waiting for things to solve themselves out. But I think that, you know, this country has made a substantial investment in many of these young immigrants, and it would be senseless to throw that away. I think most of them, you know, most of them have attended public schools. They have earned high school diplomas in the public system. They have even benefited from public health care and some other for public assistance. I think the government could get a return from all these investments by allowing them to contribute to the U.S. economy and society.
So, Andres, would you agree that we, instead of having a piecemeal bill in the House, which is possibly being proposed, that they should attack it the same way the Senate did? And may I ask where you're from?
I'm originally from Ecuador.
Okay. But would you agree that it should be a piecemeal bill in the House and then going back to the Senate, or that they should attack the same way that the Senate attacked this immigration law?
I honestly think that that it should be attacked the same way, you know.
Okay.
Yeah,
and if I can just add on to that, thank you, Andres, for your call. I want to go back to something Victoria said earlier, which is really important. The question is how we're defining merit. In this immigration bill, we're shifting from that system that Bruce Thatcher described earlier, in which there's more of an emphasis on family reunification, to a greater emphasis on what we're calling skills-based. But, of course, that's only one way of measuring skills. And Victoria's point was, I believe, that her father may have come on a skills-based visa. She's here because she's related to him. And if she hadn't had that opportunity, first of all, her family would have been split apart, but secondly, the United States would have missed out on the opportunity to have her contributions. And I think that really goes as well to Andres's point, which is we need the contributions of a broad range of people, and we can't always predict in advance who those people are going to be. One last thing before I end here, and that is that when we shift to a more, quote, merit-based system, that also says to women in developing countries, well, you better pick your husband wisely, because oftentimes those women haven't had the opportunity to attend university or to have their families pay school fees. And so what we're saying is, well, the United States is going to move towards a system that is easier for men to access and less easy for women to access. And that may not be where we want to go as a country. It's not where I'd like to see us go.
Hey, Bruce, now that the opportunity for the House to come up with their version of the bill is here, what's your sentiments on what the House is going to do based on the makeup of the House and the issues in the House?
Well, I'm pessimistic that the House will come up with a bill that can be reconciled with what the Senate does. I have, for many months, felt very strongly that the only way to approach immigration reform is with comprehensive reform. But the current bill makes me think that maybe that's not the way to go. The House seems to be oriented toward the idea of attacking individual issues with separate bills. And I don't like that either, because when that's done, which is what's happened with the immigration policy from 1965 to the present day,
mm-hmm.
there's very little attention paid to any consistent or uniform policy or basis for policy, and you get a lot of contradiction in the bills. I fear that the House is going to pass a number of narrowly focused bills, which the Senate will not then consider, and we may end up getting nothing as a result. And that's a shame for people like the Dream Act, like Andre and Victoria and even for Maria, who are trying to come in and make contributions to this country. But I would pose, and like Amanda, let me go back to an issue Victoria raised. Victoria made the comment that she thinks that we should not shut off opportunity and make it available only to people with value. That's a huge problem, and most people would agree with that. But let me put a fact out there to consider. A Gallup poll early this year, worldwide, concluded that 500 million adults in the world, given the opportunity, would choose to migrate to a different country, and 23% of those, or about 150 million, would choose to come to the United States. That's adults, not counting children and relatives. Now, we can't accept 150 million, our economy will not accept 150 million, so we have to make discriminating criteria. And I raise the question, what should they be? I guess my own view is that since we have the opportunity to choose, why don't we choose the best and the most likely contributors to American society?
Bruce, why don't you give us...
The bill, of course, doesn't address that.
Bruce, why don't you give us just general information about how people can access your works and find out more about you and what you've done.
Okay. I'd be pleased to do that. First, probably the best way is to go to the website, which is historyspeakstoday.com. That website will provide links not only to the history that's behind all of these books and immigration itself, but it'll provide links to the book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work, which is available on Amazon.com and most other online retailers.
Great, thank you. Amanda, give us a final summary and background information on how folks can access your works.
Sure. Well, thank you very much again for the opportunity to be here today, Mr. Berry and Mr. Jefferson. And thank you, Maria, for joining us and Mr. Thatcher on the phone. Very briefly, the two things I'd walk away with. Number one, this bill isn't perfect, and the Senate bill probably is better than whatever will potentially get through the House. Nevertheless, I think it advances U.S. immigration law in important ways, and it will affect people's lives very positively. So I'd encourage people who are listening to do a little more reading about the bill. Feel free to contact my organization if you are an immigrant yourself or if you're American-born and you'd like more information. We have data snapshots and other things. We're the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians. Our phone number is 215-557-2626, and our website is welcomingcenter.org.
Excellent. Maria, we appreciate you for being here truly and sharing your passion about your experience. Can you give us a final summary and information about where people can access your information?
Of course. Well, thank you again for having me, just like Amanda said. And thank you for all our listeners and those who called in. What I take from this is, like Amanda also said, this bill is not perfect, but it's something. It's hope for all of us. So keep pushing, keep fighting, keep educating others about what this bill is about and also about the real lives of immigrants who are here, because those are the things that we don't really listen to. Those are the things that we don't hear or see in this bill, are the lives that are being affected by them and the changes that are going to occur because of this bill. So someday I'll be able to come back and say I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm going to vote in the next election, and I'll be able to say I'm a business owner. I have a family here. So I'm very excited for what's coming up next. waiting for the house and to see what's going on. And if anybody ever needs help, just and if you want to get more involved with this, please visit our website at www.paimmigrant.org, where you can see more of the work that we do, and also for those who are going through the process of deferred action. So if you need any help with that, we're always there to help you.
And we can we can post all of our guest information on the Facebook page and the Tone and Tenor page. So, Randall?
We want to thank all of our guests for coming on the show today. Ms. Amanda Burson-Shilcock with the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians. Ms. Maria Sotomayor with the Pennsylvania Immigration and Citizenship Coalition. And Mr. Bruce Thatcher, author and founder of History Speaks Today. Listeners, tell your friends about Tone and Tenor, which airs shows every Friday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on WWDB AM Talk 860.